And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, a special thank you to Kimberly Isaac, who was our special guest on Empowering Women, sponsored by Ridenour, Hyten and Lewis, a great law firm. And if you thought it was safe to get back on the radio, we have Kimberly again with Understanding Autism, as well as co-host, or co-star, I should say, Paul Loudon. Paul, how are you?
Doing great.
This is great. You came in from Houston. You do it every month, twice, actually.
Well, second I come in
Monday.
Once.
Yeah, that's right. But second Monday and Tuesday, and this is exciting. And, of course, you're on the autism spectrum, diagnosed at 23, and you are now 28. And, of course, as our listeners know, from the last hour, or maybe not, Kimberly Isaac, founder and owner of Autism with Excellence.
Yeah.
I only said it 17 times last hour.
Yeah. It's a lot
and
of words.
It is Autism with Excellence, and of course, you specialize in RDI and different other therapies. Great experience since you had your, I don't know, age 17 if I remember. That must be
about 18. Almost 15 years now.
Wow, you just gave away your age. I wasn't going to do that.
Well,
okay,
I did.
Here you go. Anyway. As always, we have some great topics in understanding autism. And, Paul, I'll let you do the honors of what is today.
Well, today we wanted to talk about autism in the media, what you see in entertainment and other things that sort of help form, I guess, a cultural preconception about what autism is. I mean, we call the show Understanding Autism, and that's sort of a step beyond just being aware of autism, but also trying to help people know what autism means and what it means to interact with someone on the spectrum. And there are a lot of movies with someone who either has autism or has some other neurological disorder. I mean, the probably most famous ones are Rain Man, which a lot of people have seen. And that was overall a very good movie that showed a lot of things in a pretty authentic way, though it also creates some preconceptions because it doesn't really emphasize that there's a spectrum of autism disorders. And so you have one character who's presented one way, and that sort of forms a picture for a lot of people. You also have some movies like Forrest Gump that have someone who has some mental challenges, and they don't – I don't think they actually specifically name what he has. And so people don't know, you know, is this someone with autism? Is this someone who's just mentally retarded in some manner? Is this someone who has something else? And so it's very important to talk about what autism is and what some of the misconceptions you might get from movies about it are. I mean, we all go to the movies. We all enjoy, you know, seeing the latest comedy or cop movie or whatever. And we all know that cars don't blow up that way, or, you know, you can't dodge bullets and things like that. You know where the line is between fantasy and reality. You understand, you know, what some of the things are. But when a believable autistic character is presented, you don't know which things are being presented to make it a better movie and which things are being presented to show you what autism really is. And so sort of talking about that will help, you know, improve the understanding of the condition itself.
You know, that totally makes sense, because I think people will then look at it as truth, and they'll look at it like, wow, what great acting by, let's say, Dustin Hoffman portraying what it really is, but it may not be like you
well,
said.
Well, his acting was amazing in that movie.
It really was.
The other concern, as someone who's on the spectrum myself, is that I'm afraid to tell people that I'm on the spectrum sometimes because I don't know what misconceptions they have. I feel that, you know, if I tell them that I'm on the autism spectrum, are they going to start worrying that I'm going to have, you know, a sudden violent reaction if I don't want to get on a plane, or that, you know, I'm going to be unable to do something or whatever. So you don't know what other people know about it, and you're afraid to tell them because you don't know what preconceptions they've got. So there's, for me, a careful balance between I want them to get to know me a little while so they know who I really am before I talk about it, but I feel dishonest not telling them up front and early about it. So it's very difficult because there isn't a good understanding of autism just in our culture.
And I think particularly with Rain Man, this is such a good example. A couple of things. One is this movie came out in 1988, and that's just when, you know, in fact, this movie probably was the first movie to have specifically autism portrayed. And I think the benefits of having this movie out were that it did spark awareness. And in fact, some of the consultants on this film, one of them was Dr. Bernard Rimland, who has a high-functioning son with autism, and actually, he's no longer alive, but he was one of the creative consultants for this film. And what I had learned, I did a little research too on this film, and I very much enjoyed this film. You know, something that people don't understand, and this is related to Rain Man, is only about 10% of people who have autism also have savant qualities. And I think everybody, and I get asked this a lot because I work with people who have autism, are all of your clients like Rain Man? And I think when they say that, they're asking me if they have these savant abilities, you know, can they count toothpicks off the floor? Can they, you know, and actually a person can be a savant and not have autism. And so I think that's an important distinction too. And one of the characters that Dustin Hoffman studied, he actually studied three people on the spectrum, but the character that he modeled his savant qualities from was a person who had another mental disability, actually brain-injured person, who had no corpus callosum, which is like the membrane in between the two hemispheres. And so a lot of his savant behavior actually was modeled off of this man named Kim Peek, and he was a savant, but he didn't have autism. So I think it's important, too, to clarify, you know, that point, too, is, you know, from Rain Man, we did see some very interesting behavior that we're going to talk about, and one of those things was that savant quality of being able to count cards in Vegas and, you know, the toothpicks and all that, and it seems kind of cool, but a lot of times, you know, most people with autism don't have that kind of savant-like qualities.
You know, that's one of the misconceptions that you're clearing up right now, in fact.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even the movie, I'd almost say the movie reinforces that misconception when partway through the movie they go to visit another doctor. Tom Cruise is seeking some advice for how to deal with his character's brother. And the doctor, almost immediately after hearing he has autism and saying, I don't really know that much about it, does he have any special abilities? And that he doesn't really explain that it's a rare thing for it to happen or anything. He just sort of seems to assume, this is a doctor character, assuming that the autistic person might have special abilities. And that sort of shows to the public an image of it's common enough for this doctor to just out ask it, you know?
And I mean, I do see something I see just in my practice. I mean, there are people I work with that are very intelligent, but there's a difference between being classified as a savant versus just having a high IQ. It's actually really different because of the mental abilities in question are usually with mathematical calculations or artistic abilities, music, prodigy level things with those particular areas. So IQ isn't necessarily a measure of being a savant either. But there are savants out there, again, who don't have autism, and you could run into somebody off the street who's a savant.
So how do you determine that? Is that a savant without autism? How do you...
A professional would be able to diagnose something like that. I mean, I'm sure that's probably in the DSM, the manual that psychiatrists and psychologists use to distinguish. I mean, there's set characteristics for diagnosing a person. You know, another thing I think that's significant about Rain Man coming out in the 80s was that that's when autism was introduced into the DSM. And the DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Psychiatric Disorders. And so it's kind of interesting that that is one of the very first impressions that society has of autism. And it does stick out in everybody's minds pretty clearly. In fact, that's always the first thing people ask me. Are your clients all like Rain Man?
Well, to be fair, I mean, it is pretty much the biggest name actors in
Definitely.
A role that has a character who is explicitly autistic and is basically the focus of the entire movie.
Right.
So in that, honestly, it's one of the better impressions we could hope for, but
yes,
it doesn't, you know, clarify enough about some of the details that probably weren't that clarified in the 80s anyway. I mean, the idea of it as a
right.
spectrum especially and going all the way up through Asperger's just weren't set in stone or even close to really
right.
being
it
where they are
so,
now.
It was so new. I mean, remember the generations of autism. We had the 60s and 70s where people were institutionalized and the therapies involved shock therapy, inflicting pain, behavior. I mean, it was very rough stuff because, you know, they didn't understand what was going on. I mean, there was a lot of that, unfortunately, in the 60s and 70s. In the 80s, you know, different kinds of behavioral treatments were developed, but autism was starting to become more prevalent and, you know, more talked about. And what I really appreciate about this movie is Dustin Hoffman did spend quite a bit of time observing several different people on the spectrum before portraying. And he actually, observably, when you see his behaviors, some of those things are very accurate. But the thing that Paul is saying, too, is that, of course, he's just one character, so he can't portray the whole autistic population. But that's just one sample of maybe, you know, just a handful of people that he observed, you know, prior to playing that role.
Well, I remember I had a psychiatrist client back in, it was actually the 80s, and I was shocked to know he did, like you said, shock therapy on people. I go, really? Why? I couldn't understand that.
Well,
I go,
that's a
does
show.
That really?
That's another show.
Yeah, well, but I just couldn't figure that out, and he couldn't quite explain it. I go, well, is that a punishment? Is it?
Well, it was very concretely, you know, it is that very behavioral sense. I get reinforced or I get punished, and therefore my behavior will change.
Oh.
And there just wasn't enough understanding about a lot of things, not just autism, but, you know, human learning and all that sort of thing.
They don't do that now, do they?
I would hope not. I mean, nobody I know does that now, but ooh. I guess you never know.
Paul, what have you heard about this?
You know, I would say I thought I'd read about it still being used as a valid therapy in very exceptional cases, like severe psychosis kind of situations where you're really the only thing you have to work with is physical stimuli, and it's very carefully, you know, monitored. And
that may not just be autism alone. Yeah. I mean, some people have, you know, some other psychiatric serious condition that, you know, I don't know. But that is not a common practice anymore.
Well, that's good.
Goodness.
That's good to hear, because yes. I was shocked when I heard that.
Yeah. No. But I was thinking we could talk a little bit about what the behaviors we saw from Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man and sort of help decode for the listeners. Maybe they could go, you know, listen and think back to when they saw this movie, and we can sort of help broaden their perspective on the spectrum.
So when we come back from our break, we will continue our discussion and let's give out the phone number. Maybe people can chime in. Go ahead, Paul.
You can reach us at 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632, and we'd love to hear your calls.
Excellent, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater from my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. We're talking about autism as it's portrayed in the media. And we've been talking about Rain Man. And Paul and Kim, you wanted to talk about some of the behaviors that might be accurate or not accurate.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, what stood out for you? I know we just both recently reviewed that film. So I'm kind of curious. He and I haven't had a chance to discuss to each other what stood out. So what do you think?
It'd be really hard for me to specifically, you know, identify anything that stood out. I could recognize in a lot of his behaviors what I thought, you know, were the reasons for them. And sometimes they actually explain them. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, most people watching the movie for the first time, your first real introduction to the character and his problems is the scene in his room where Tom Cruise has just found out he's got a brother and is walking through the room, you know, touching his books and looking at his cards and everything. And you can clearly see how upsetting it is for having someone mess with his stuff. And that scene did a great job of sort of showing that they can have very reactions to things that other people would take as, you know, okay, ordinary, or wouldn't really upset them as much as it upset this character. But it also didn't really help explain, you know, why, or this was something that sort of recurred throughout the whole movie, I felt, is that they never took a chance. I mean, they didn't know as well why back then either, but they kept talking. One thing they said about autism a lot that really did stand out to me, actually, is when they would say, he lives in his own world. That phrasing and the way they present that almost makes it sound, I don't want to say like a choice, but that they are retreating to somewhere else rather than it's really, they live in this world, but they don't have the same tools for reacting to and interpreting this world as other people do.
Right.
But the movie kept presenting it as he lives in his own world, and that sort of creates a very different image of what autism is to other people, that he's not really here.
So I'm wondering, during that scene you were describing, could you relate to that at all with the structure maybe you have set up for yourself, and if somebody was messing with your structure, I mean, how would that affect you?
Man, if I had someone, let's say, using my computer, that would upset me a lot. You know, if I gave them permission to, fine, but I'd still probably be a little uncomfortable. I mean, I've come to terms with, you know, for other people, you know, can I look something up on your computer? It's no big deal. But for me, my computer is my computer. That there are just things that I don't want other people touching that belong to me or interacting with or changing, that it can be a very strong feeling about having people, you know, do that. And so I could definitely relate to him there. I mean, you know, obviously it was very, very bad for his character that he wasn't able to cope with it at all. He had no coping mechanism and no way to express his dissatisfaction.
The communication factors, I think you have, and this is where sort of the spectrum aspect comes in, is the communication differences that people have. You know, someone like Paul would be able to verbalize maybe more accurately what they were feeling at the time, whereas somebody who is less verbal or nonverbal may have more of a physical reaction. So it's important for people to realize some of those physical reactions we see in scenes aren't just, it's not, oh, that's what people with autism do. That's, this person was upset who has autism, but he also didn't have the skill set and communication abilities to communicate his feelings well. So that's like a more accurate way of...
Well, I mean, that's sort of what it was throughout the whole movie, is that if you notice... Dustin Hoffman's character, he doesn't show a lot of emotion. There is just, you know, he's got his sort of nope, yep, you know, I don't know. And it's all pretty much said in very similar tones of voice. And then there's sudden outbursts of emotion where he gets, you know, very upset when the fire alarm goes off or when he doesn't want to get on the airplane. And that's because he doesn't have access to the full range of expression, that it's sort of a cutoff. He can give a very minor response, and then when it gets major or significant, he jumps up to huge reaction. And he doesn't have the range of responses where, instead of just being able to say to someone, look, I'm really uncomfortable flying, I'm not going to be able to get on this plane with you, he can't say that. He doesn't have the ability to make the distinction about where he should be saying that. So there's a, you know, say it with almost no emotional emphasis or go all out because this is the only way I have to stop it.
And that's one of the core deficits of autism in general, regardless of communication, is emotional regulation. You know, somebody may feel something and their range is very polar or extreme on things. And it doesn't mean that they're a violent person or anything, but sometimes, you know, that self-regulation, emotional regulation, and considering all the factors that need to be considering are a little bit harder. So you know, they may have this feeling and it's going to come out because that's what they feel right now. And they may not be accounting for the other things that maybe should be observed or, you know, things like that. But it's very rare, honestly. I have not met very many people with autism who are truly violent people. It's always they're misunderstood. They're unable to communicate in a way that people are understanding. I mean, I've heard so many mislabels of people. It's very frustrating.
So basically, then, that's another misconception or perception.
Right.
And even though these movies may give awareness, but sometimes they could be maybe a little dangerous, too, giving the wrong impression.
Yeah, I mean, you see Dustin Hoffman in that movie screaming and sort of flailing his arms and having a breakdown in the airport or whatever. And they don't present that. I mean, if you notice in the movie, he didn't really hit anyone. I mean,
No. There
was one point where Tom Cruise tried to hug him and he had a reaction and Tom Cruise backed away quickly, but he didn't cause harm to anyone. But people see that and all they see is that he's having this reaction where if you saw a normal person having that reaction, you would think it's a seizure or something. You would think that they were not in control of what they were doing. He is more or less in control of what he's doing. He's just not able to express what he wants to express without doing that. And so he's making a noise and he's making actions and, you know, one scene he's beating his head against a door. This is him trying to say, I'm really upset, I'm really scared, you need to stop that. But he doesn't have – if you think about it for a normal person, you've got to slope upwards from, you know, mildly annoyed, very annoyed, incredibly upset, angry. He doesn't have that whole range. He's just got one step is – I'm expressing things normally, I'm having a breakdown. And he's not having a uncontrolled breakdown, it's just the only way he's able to express it. And as you saw also in the movie, is he came back from it very quickly once the situation was returned to something acceptable. He wasn't out of control.
And it wasn't really explained the way you just explained it in the movie, so it left people to their own imagination what that meant.
And the truth is, I mean, I'm fairly confident in the fact that whoever he was observing on the spectrum, those things look like those. I mean, to an eye, an untrained eye, or person who has no exposure to autism, you see those behaviors. And what people tend to do is they assess the behaviors and not the processes behind the behaviors. And obviously, this movie wasn't about analyzing the process of autism, but. What's interesting is looking at it now. I mean, they didn't even see autism in terms of processes back then either. It was all behavior.
And just to speak about that briefly before we go on to about the movie is you were saying that, you know, when people see these behavior, they don't analyze the process behind it. The other thing is people often think, you know, what would I be thinking if I were doing that? That they can only relate the behavior to their life experiences and the way they think. So if they see someone having a breakdown, they think, what could push me to this? Why would I be in a situation like this? And they don't understand that it's a completely, I guess I want to say alien to them, thought process behind what leads to that. But there is an actual thought process, that it's just a interaction with the world based on a different set of assumptions and understandings.
And that's really key. I think, you know, one of the biggest things in autism is it. And I hear this all the time. Yeah, they're in their own world, or they just prefer this, or they like this. It's not really accurate to say that because they don't know what they don't know. And pieces of information that we are receiving and processing with great ease is not always happening for them. And so we can't assume that everybody has access and the processing abilities to process everything the same as we do.
And that's another actually kind of great thing about that movie is you saw Tom Cruise go through that level of understanding of, at the beginning of the movie, he thought his brother was just doing these things. You know, his brother misunderstood some noises he heard, walked into the bedroom at the wrong time. Then Tom Cruise got really upset with him, said, go to bed now, you know, just follow my orders kind of thing, and didn't understand at all that he wasn't understanding why he was upset, wasn't understanding what the situation was. By the end of the movie, Tom Cruise is much more in tune with the fact that this is outside of his character's brother's control and much more understanding of his character's needs and position in the world.
You know, and I thought that was maybe the sub-theme of the movie, actually, is looking through Tom Cruise's eyes.
I mean, from my perspective, that was the point of the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
It makes sense. And if people looked at it that way, they could gain a little bit more compassion, understanding, and awareness.
I think so, too. I think that this movie had so many benefits to society. You know, we're sort of talking about how to debunk some of the myths it's created. But it does have benefits, too. I think that that was one of them. I think bringing the awareness and also watching the journey that Tom Cruise went through with his brother and the evolution of that and the compassion factor. And I think, you know, it's different for everybody. Not everybody has a sibling who has autism. But if you're just out in the world and you see... I've been seeing lately, I travel a lot at the airports, I almost always see a child with autism, and I know instantly, I see a few things, and some of those behaviors where some people might freak out, I think, oh, this person's really excited. There's a lot of lights and sounds and all kinds of stuff at the airport, and I see sometimes I see kids sort of running around, flapping their hands, excited, and I'm able to interpret that as something very different. Maybe than as somebody who would just say, what is that kid doing running around the airport, you know?
And, yeah, I think you're right about the movie being great. I mean, I want to state that I think it's great, too, that, to you know, from my perspective, what it did is a very excellent job at raising awareness of autism, that it showed autism, showed that someone with the spectrum could go out and do ordinary things in the ordinary world, that people could get used to being around them and everything, and that, you know, for the 80s and early 90s, that was excellent. Now... we've raised a lot of awareness about autism in the world in general, and now is the time to start working on understanding it. And the movie creates a few misunderstandings.
Right.
And, you know, that's what we're talking about here. Not that anything was wrong with the movie.
Right.
It was incredible. But now we're moving forward from that.
And I think, too, that, you know, another thing that I noticed from Dustin Hoffman's character, you know, he was a person who had autism that had a lot of sensitivities to sound and touch. And that's something very common for people with autism, maybe to varying degrees. But again, you know, his reactions to these things were so startling to just the average person. Like, wow, you know, what? Why would he have such a very grand reaction to something as simple as, or is, why would that be a big deal type thing? But some people on the spectrum are hypersensitive or hyposensitive to sound, sight, and touch.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, hypersensitive is extra sensitive. So just like a very, very light touch may feel like nails to them or something rough. Hyposensitive is you could be squeezing them hard and they don't have the same sense of feeling, which is why sometimes you see, I've seen some kids, those kids who are hyposensitive have a lot harder time, actually, in my opinion, because they can't get enough input on things, and they also can't feel pain very well because their measurement or their gauge inside of pain is very different.
And you mentioned, you know, you see usually at the airports at least one child.
Lately, I've been seeing a lot of that.
And what's interesting is, you know, I wonder how many of the parents realize that and they would have their own different behavior towards their child if they had more understanding.
Well, the nice thing is, in the last few times I've seen this happen, the parents seem to be handling it well. I think from the parent perspective, I think it's probably embarrassing a little bit for them because they, even though they understand, they're probably thinking, oh no, everyone around me thinks I'm letting my kid just run wild or do, you know, and I've, so usually I try to do something nice and encouraging. I'll walk by them and I'll just say, oh, he looks really excited, or, you know, just something on the positive instead of just walking by with a judgment of some sort.
So a learning would be next time you're at the airport and you feel like judging a little kid and their parents, maybe stop and think that maybe you don't know what you don't know. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Paul Alden and Kimberly Isaac. This is Understanding Autism. If you want to call in, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. We're going to still talk about probably I Am Sam, the other sisters, some great movies out there. With great awareness, we'll be right back.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas. I love that. And Kimberly Isaac, all the way from Chandler.
Ahwatukee,
that's right. I forgot. Not too far. And we've been talking about autism in the media, how it's portrayed, and specifically Rain Man, maybe the most well-known of all the movies starring Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise.
And I expect we'll be coming back to autism in the media in future shows as we go through other movies that show it very well.
And books.
And books, yeah. I mean, the media isn't just movies, obviously. We can talk about signs of it in the news, books, any other mentions of it. We'd love to hear from our listeners or viewers if they have any specific thing that we'd like to look more deeply into at some point.
Yes, we have a Facebook page, actually. We want to hear your comments and your thoughts.
And how do you get there?
Facebook.com/UnderstandingAutismRadio.
Excellent.
And also I have to give a shout out to our Kurt, because he kind of inspired this idea on a previous show when he brought up Mr. Holland's Opus. Thank you, Kurt. Can you give yourself applause?
Thank there you. He is. Self-applause. I love it.
It was a brilliant thought that sparked more brilliant thoughts, so thank you.
And feel free to call in again, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. Any comments, any questions about Rain Man or anything?
Or autism.
Yes, and
bring it
feel
on.
Free to call in. All right, bring it on.
All right, so one thing when watching the movie that stuck out to me is there's a scene, I don't know, it's about halfway through. Again, it's the doctor scene where he's asking the doctor for help in dealing with his brother, says, you know, is there anything I can do? And the doctor tells him, you're very lucky, he's high-functioning, he can speak. And the term high-functioning autistic is sort of different in connotation now as it was back when this movie was made, that we have a much broader range for the autism spectrum, and especially the high-functioning range includes a lot more, such as Asperger's disorder, that weren't really even explored at the time of this movie, effectively. So, you know, the idea of a high-functioning autistic, when people see this movie, they think, first off, well, if he's high-functioning, most of them, if not all of them, need to be worse off than he was. And from my perspective, you know, he's pretty badly off. I mean, there is a very significant range of worse condition, but he is, would you call it the lower end of the high-functioning spectrum now, or would you be hesitant even about that? Or?
Well, I would be. I don't really, well, yeah, I would be hesitant about that. I think this brings up really good points on what constitutes true high-functioning, and also the focus on, you know, when this doctor said, you're lucky he can speak. And we had someone bring up a very good point that seemed to be almost like a surprise. Like, most of these people with autism aren't speaking, so you should be lucky. And the thing is language is not an indicator of outcome necessarily. You know, it's communication that's important. And speaking doesn't mean that they're going to end up higher functioning than another person. So, I mean, I think the other thing that sort of blurred the lines with Rain Man was that he also had this savant syndrome, and they didn't really separate it. I mean, and again, at the time, they didn't know any of this. So today, if we're going to do a remake, it would be this man has autism, and he also has savant syndrome. And I think that kind of blurs the lines of, okay, so he has some amazing abilities. Does that make him high functioning? But he can't really live on his own. I mean, what constitutes high functioning? I think that definition is actually argued a lot amongst professionals. And, you know, I always go for, you know, quality of life and thought processes and how this person's living. You know, are they able to live on their own? You know, maintain successful, rewarding employment, have relationships, things like that. And those things aren't really talked about a lot. It is always about, can he talk? Can he do the schoolwork? Can he catch a ball? You know, things like that. I think it's time to broaden the perspective of what high functioning really is.
And, you know, there really wasn't much he could do beyond being able to talk in that movie. There was the scene toward the end where he tried to use a toaster oven and,
right?
You know, set off the fire alarms when he couldn't figure out how to get the door open and didn't turn it back off again and didn't really understand what was going on. That
Right. If
he didn't have a caretaker, he would be in trouble in very basic day-to-day life, food preparation.
Right.
He was confused when he couldn't use his own shower, couldn't deal with going out in the rain, you know, that very basic things were providing a significant challenge for him. So presenting that as high functioning gives people a very skewed understanding of what high functioning actually means today if they watch this movie.
Right. And, you know, academic intelligence, or we call static intelligence, where they can, you know, so he did have some amazing abilities. That's, you know, undeniable. But that where he was lacking was one of the core deficits of autism, which is dynamic intelligence. You know, being able to observe, analyze, identify multiple right answers to one problem. And you see that in the movie, like you said, you know, having difficulty, so with the shower or switching showers, it's like there can, you know, that same but different concept can be really hard for people on the spectrum.
They came back to it a few times that he couldn't deal with clothing that didn't come from Kmart for a while.
Right. And those are more static ways of thinking.
Or a good one was, you know, they showed his savant abilities. He multiplied several large numbers in his head. And then they asked them, if you have a dollar and you give away 50 cents, how much money do you have left? And he couldn't make the connection between, you know, numbers and money and numbers as an abstract.
Right. And so that's, in my opinion, I don't consider that to be high functioning, because functioning in the world, being successful in the world, is reaching a level of independence where you're competent being interdependent with others, and also being able to accept, interpret, and sort of flow with novelty. And that's something that was really hard for him in the movie and for a lot of people on the spectrum.
So with this movie, if it was made today, would it be made today, knowing what people know?
I think it would still. I think that most of what in this movie was truly excellent. I think they might not use the term high functioning because that has a more specific meaning now, that they might try to sort of avoid specific words that can give misinterpretations. But I think most of what was in that movie was accurate and excellent.
I agree. And I think that, again, I think the thing we have to remember, too, is Dustin Hoffman observed three specific people who had autism and one person who had the savant syndrome who didn't have autism. So he was strictly observing these individuals, and going off of three or four people, it's really hard to represent an entire spectrum based on just a very small population.
And honestly, I mean, you know,
but he did a great job.
I would dream of being able to sit down with Dustin Hoffman and ask him, you know, how much of these behaviors did he understand when he was doing this, and how much of these did he watch them and just pick up? Because there were bits of them that I want to say almost didn't feel like acting, that you could see, you wondered if he knew why he was doing that as an actor or if he was just doing something he'd seen, because it seemed so authentic to me.
Well, one of the things I noticed about his character in general, he was really so, at times, just so very passive. And I think that might be easier to play in some ways, because you don't see a lot of dynamic initiation in autism. And when I was watching him, I felt like in those moments, knowing that you're just a passive partner in society versus an active initiator of your own life, you know, type thing. And I mean, I don't know. I'd love to talk to him, too. Maybe we could get him somehow.
Email him and tell him we'd love to get him in here.
To our people.
All right. I think that's actually a great idea. I know great actors, and he is a great actor.
Oh, amazing. He's one of my favorites.
He is also.
And I give him
favorites.
A lot of credit for, you know, he portrayed what he observed, and he really did it the heart of it was captured. I mean, he did it, for lack of a better word on my part, as respectfully. I mean, I could tell that he, whatever he did internalize, he did it respectfully. I didn't sense any, like, anger, judgment on it, you know, stuff like that. But
I'm going to guess. I mean, actually, that's a great idea. We should try to get him because, but I think he's such a great actor. I think part of acting is not just modeling the behavior, but really modeling as much as you can about thinking style and values and everything that makes up the mindset. And I bet, if I had to bet,
yeah.
I bet he did it.
Well,
what
I
do you think,
isn't he a method actor? If he's a method actor, they do a lot of internal processes. There's different kinds of acting, and I don't know, actually.
I have no idea, but I mean, as I said, that's what I was curious about, is, you know, how much of the thought process he could really relate to and put into his role,
especially
rather than
time.
Just trying to guess what the connections and behaviors were, or, you know, go through a third party.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, he spent so much time observing. In fact, something I heard long ago, and I don't know how accurate this is, I know he observed lots of people, or those three people, but I heard that he actually lived with one of them for like a month with their family. And so I wonder if having that exposure does help beyond the behavior itself, but to see how, you know, this was all playing out interactively. I mean, I know for me in my job, I've spent a lot of time very closely with families in their homes. And that really, that changes a lot in terms of perspective when you see how things affect family members and loved ones and the relationships and stuff like that.
And it may have been what is called deep trance identification, which I won't say where that's coming from. However, where you identify so intently and so thoroughly on someone that it just transcends just the behavioral part, but unconsciously you start to understand on an intuitive level. That may have happened too.
It may have. But now I'm curious. I'm going to have to research what kind of acting. Because, yeah, I remember I used to take method acting classes a long time ago.
That's right.
And they had you really do a lot of interesting, really internal feeling-based things. And I think Robert De Niro is a method actor. And I would suspect Dustin Hoffman's right up there. They're my two favorites of all time.
And
seriously.
Don't forget Al Pacino.
Not bad. He's my third favorite.
Mine, too. We have the same? Okay, what's your number one? Is it Dustin?
You know, ooh.
Gosh. Robert or Al?
It could be.
Like we're first name basis.
I know. Get him on the show then. Come on.
I like that, yes.
You know, actually, I would say it's a tie between Dustin and Robert De Niro. I mean, they just are amazing.
Phenomenal.
Really
Mine
amazing.
Too. Those are my top three. Yeah. How about you, Paul?
You know, I couldn't answer that question. You know, mine probably changes from whatever great movie I've seen recently. So, I mean, right now, Justin Hoffman's up there near the top, but next week, who knows what I'll have just seen.
It could be Justin, what's his name?
Justin Bieber?
Or whatever.
Does
I don't
he even act? I mean,
I don't know.
What does
no,
he do?
Timberlake,
that guy.
That one.
Justin Timberlake?
I think so.
He's a singer.
He
oh,
acted
wait.
In something recently.
Right.
I heard he was pretty good, but
yeah.
I haven't
no,
seen
no,
it.
He's out, what is it? Bad teacher.
I don't know.
I think so. And when we when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Paul Alden and Kimberly Isaac. This is Understanding Autism. We're talking about autism in the media, how it's portrayed. And if you want to call in, again, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, heard every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. We're talking about autism in the media, how it's portrayed. We're specifically talking about Rain Man. So, Paul or Kim, any other behaviors that you have noticed, observed, or want to comment on, other than getting Dustin Hoffman on the phone right now?
Oh, we would love him. Well,
you go ahead.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, you know, I guess one overall point just to reiterate is the time era. You know, we still see these actors in movies today, and sometimes it's hard to differentiate time periods and understanding, especially with this disorder. But again, at the time, this was 1988, that was the top of the top. That's all they knew. I mean, you know, it's just interesting to see. I would be interested to see if any recent movie, in fact, I think there was only one that I saw on the list that was in 2009 or 10, but it would be really interesting to see movies coming out now that, you know, and how they would reflect and portray, you know, on autism.
Well, that's
there's so much more information.
Adam is the one that I've heard is really
good.
That's
the most recent.
And that's someone who's on, he is a high functioning, he's living on his own, he's got Asperger's, and he tries to form a relationship with someone. And I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard continually that I should, and
yeah.
It's definitely on my list.
It'd be interesting to do some comparisons. But on the big picture, though, for people out there who have seen Rain Man and have limited exposure to autism, you know, I think just, you know, keeping in mind that, well, this is all evolving. The understanding of autism and, you know, how for professionals, too. I mean, everybody's continually learning about the disorder.
Well, and that's another important thing is for a lot of us, 1988 doesn't feel like that far ago. I mean, it's the past, but it's not the distant past. It's, you know, relatively recent. And we remember a lot of things that happened that in 88 or around then that are still relevant now. But our understanding of autism has changed drastically. It's been, 22 years? 23 years.
Yeah.
It has been 23 years since that movie was made. And the understanding of autism has changed drastically since then in,
right,
you know, in both therapeutic and fundamental biomedical understandings of it.
Right.
And so what was in that movie, it won't feel old if you're watching it. I mean, most of the,
right,
the stuff in that movie doesn't look that old. It's the 80s, but it's the end,
right,
of the 80s. You watch that movie, and it's sort of still a recent-ish movie. It's not, you know, in black and white. It's not, you know, anything like that.
Right.
So it can be hard for people to make that connection that certain aspects of this movie are drastically outdated.
And the thing is in the 80s, again, that was the beginning of what would be considered like a second-generation treatment area. So like we said, 60s and 70s were institutions and medications and you know, shock therapies and aversion type therapies and all that stuff.
That's actually a point, is at the end of the movie, they sent him back to the institution. And I think that now, at the end of the movie, they'd say, oh, he's surviving out in the world. Let's see if we can improve that.
Yeah, I mean,
I think if it were made now, that would be one major change to the movie right there, is that you would have a different final approach.
Well, definitely. And I think in the 80s, you know, the other thing that just came to mind is when you say high functioning, it's, you know, in the 60s and 70s, it was just about sort of compliance. And then the 80s, it's like, well, let's see if we can teach them some skills, you know, academics, language, things like that. We're past that now. We're on third generation stuff here. So we care about skills. Skills are good things. I mean, obviously, academics are good things, but they don't predict the outcome of a person's life in entirety. And so now third generation treatment involves a balance of examining the factors unique to the person and, most importantly, focusing on the mental processes, not just the skills and behaviors alone or just the biomedical things like that.
You know, and Paul, I think you mentioned a movie, the most recent one, Adam, 2009. There's actually one even more recent than that.
Oh.
You ready?
What have you got over there?
2010, My Name is Khan. And I haven't seen that one, but it was released in 2010. And anyway, that we'll have to check that out,
talk about it later. We definitely want to come back to this topic on other movies as we get, you know, empty shows or time to do it. It would be great to, you know, just look through movies and see how we can help to improve the understanding of autism that people take away from those movies. Or movies about sort of mental conditions in general, because there's a lot of movies out there that don't say what this person's condition is. I mean, obviously, Forrest Gump is a hugely popular movie. And you watch that movie, and he's a little slow, and he doesn't quite get things, but you don't really know what's going on there. And, you know, I would say it's pretty clearly not autism, but I understand enough about it to say that, whereas a lot of people are like, you know, I don't know what that is. You have a bunch of other movies where you have people with mental conditions, you know, and you can't tell the difference between, Down syndrome has physical signs usually, but you've got, you know, mental retardation of various sorts. You've got, autism, obviously, and just a wide range of other issues that can have emotional difficulties or, you know, mental difficulties that people in general don't know the distinctions between. And sort of that's why it's important for people to understand what autism isn't and is, so that when they're watching these movies and then they meet someone autistic, they don't know, you know, don't expect things that they really shouldn't be expecting.
Right. And that list actually that you have up here in the studio, that link to the list is posted on our Facebook page.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, if anybody's interested. And actually, we would love comments about if anybody has seen some of these movies. We haven't seen all of them on the list, but we'd love to hear some of your favorites, because that would inspire some future shows and how to dissect some of the things you guys have seen and comment on.
And some on the list, of course, the other sister with Juliet Lewis, and she was also in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. She was also in that one, too,
yeah.
Which was
the
about
other
autism.
Sister was one of my that was very emotional for me for many reasons. I think that, and we can come back to that in a future show, but it really showed the impact that kind of disability had on the family and the marriage of the parents and the progression of her life from being a child to an adult. And it was just it was a huge emotional journey for everybody involved. And I thought it was a really, really interesting representation of all of that.
And a great, great movie by itself. And of course, and we could get back into this later, but my initial impression of that was the great determination that she had to be independent. Is that a sign? Do you see that often on the spectrum?
You know, I do. It's kind of hit or miss. I mean, I have a couple of people that I work with that are extremely highly motivated, and I'm not even sure where it comes from. It's amazing. And then I have some people who are more neutral about that sort of thing. It just kind of varies. I think personality obviously has, I mean, not everything is this autism or is it not? A person is a person first. They have their personality. They have, you know, things about them. Not everything's autism, but in that character she played, I would say it's pretty accurate of some of the people I've seen who have that drive to just, yeah, want that independence and so clearly and knowing how to, you know, set up the path for herself. That was a little unusual that she was able to do that so easily. That was not exactly accurate, but
sometimes you have to make allowances for filmmaking and a good story.
It's film.
Well, that's true. It is Hollywood.
It has to be a good story, or you don't get to any audience, and you lose everything.
That was a good one. We should definitely add that to our...
Yeah, and then we're almost at the end of the show, but it seemed there's a common theme, at least the movies I've seen. I haven't seen all these. The compassion from some of the family members, and that's also interesting to note, and I think that's excellent. Let's give out some contact information. Kimberly and Paul, how do they reach you? How do they see your Facebook? What's up on that?
Well, there's, as you said, there's our Facebook page, facebook.com/understandingautismradio.
And you can also email us at, you can email me at kim@autismwithexcellence.com. And if you have comments for Paul, I could send it right over to him.
And we'll be on again tomorrow from 3 to 4. What's up tomorrow?
Well, I keep coming back to the idea of understanding autism versus awareness of autism, so we're just going to attempt to bring a little more understanding for, you know, how to talk about autism with people who may have no knowledge of it whatsoever.
Well, thank you so much, Kimberly Isaac, Paul Loudon. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday from 3 to 4, and more tomorrow. Tune in, 3 to 4, KXXT, 1010 AM. We'll see you tomorrow.